Hey, what's up, Cub fans? Welcome to episode 130 of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Ryan Davis, here again with Sean Sears, both writers for NBC Sports Chicago and various others. Other than last night's game, how are you doing?
Besides the Cubs, I'm doing good.
So this is what the Cubs do now. They get a solid to excellent effort from their starting pitcher, and they don't score. They score one run, which they've done in each of their last five games. This time they wasted another solid outing from Kyle Hendricks. He allowed two runs in the first inning, but ended up going seven, allowing just those two runs. He did give up 10 hits. Some of them were kind of weak contact. He only walked one. He only struck out three. So it wasn't top shelf Kyle Hendricks, but it was Kyle Hendricks when he's giving you what you need, which is seven innings, two earned runs. You should be able to do something with that. But the Cubs stranded a runner in every single inning. If you weren't able to watch this game, that stat is every bit as frustrating as it sounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it was a tough game. They scored another run off a solo shot. That's four or five now consecutive games of scoring one run on a solo home run, which is still an MLB record. Was an MLB record at four games, now five. Let's see if we can go for six tonight. Just kidding. Please don't do that. Yeah, it's been frustrating, especially when you see a guy like Kyle Hendricks put out a really solid start outside, you know, the hits. It's just like, I don't know what the Cubs need to do. They just can't seem to score with runners in scoring position. But luckily, we probably have a guy that might help with that. But we can talk about that in a sec.
Yeah, before we get there, you kind of led into something that I was going to start for the podcast. And I just figured we'll do this on every podcast until they stop doing this to us. But let's play a game called Who Hits the Solo Homer. So tonight, remember, Liriano's on the mound. He's a lefty. Mm-hmm. Who you got for a solo homer tonight?
Ooh. I feel like it's Javier Baez. I feel like he hasn't had one in a bit.
Yep, that was mine too. He had two hits yesterday. He made some solid contact at times. Feels like he's kind of coming out of it. He's my pick for solo homer. But sneaky on this list, another guy who's making solid contact better lately that's getting overlooked because the Cubs aren't doing anything in general, is Alvaro Mora, who is, obviously he kills lefties. So I would get Baez one, maybe Almora two.
That's a good point. Almora had a couple good swings yesterday against Zimmerman. He didn't hit him hard, but he found some holes. I was impressed with that. But yeah, that's a good pick. I think, I almost want to change my pick to Almora. I feel like he might actually be the one. He crushes lefties. That's a good point.
I'll take Baez. You can have Almora. And I guess the field versus that. I mean, the field would be the smart play. But
we're not here for that. We're here for glory.
Right. So tonight, the Cubs finish out their series with the Tigers with John Lester on the mound against Liriano. Over his last seven starts, Liriano has a 6.83 ERA with just one quality start, and that was a loss against the Cubs on the 4th of July. So he had a quality start. His last one was against the Cubs, of course, and now he's had six non-quality starts since then.
It's funny you were saying that because I was thinking, I was like, I think he pitched pretty well against the Cubs.
Yep, that was the last time he pitched well. He went six innings and allowed three earned runs in that game. So like the bare minimum for a quality start, the Cubs won. Since then, Liriano has pitched 21 and two-thirds innings. He has allowed 30 hits, 16 walks. He struck out about 19. So 19. So that's not too terrible in 21 and two-thirds innings, but 18 earned runs.
That's the bad one. That's the one you like to. I feel like I've said this with almost every pitcher the Cubs have faced that's been on a poor like run as of recent when they run into the Cubs. This should be a rebound game, but expect a home run for Alvaro Mora, and that's all you can take to the bank at this point.
Which for a guy who has what, five home runs, that's going out on a limb a little bit, but
yeah. Hey.
Yeah, that just seems like it would be what it is. John Lester, also not good in his last seven games, actually has an ERA higher than Liriano in his last seven. But the more important thing, I think, is that Lester looked really good his last time through six shutout innings against the Pirates. No walks, four hits, eight strikeouts, and a 1-0 win. So if I had to bet money on which which starting pitcher was going to have the better day, I would probably bet Lester, and I'm not a betting man. But at the same time, you just can't, you can't ignore what the Cubs offense is doing right now.
Yeah, it's just been bad. I just, it would kill me if John Lester had another performance like he did last week and has close to 8 Ks and shuts out the Pirates. Or such, if I could talk right now, shuts out the Tigers. I forgot Liriano is not a, a Pirate anymore. yeah, it would be such a bummer if Lester had a good outing and we once again just gave him one run or two runs and that's it. It was enough for his last win, but I don't think we can bank on that again. So let's hope the Cubs can pull this together.
Yeah. Well, the one thing that they've done to improve their chances offensively is they made a deal yesterday. And that deal involved former New York Mets and Washington Nationals second baseman slash infielder Daniel Murphy. Now, the average Cub fan will remember him as the guy who hit roughly 40 home runs against the Cubs in the 2015 NLCS, including the, I think, the softest hit home run I've ever seen. It was 83 miles an hour off the bat, but basically just a pop-up that carried and just got over the fence in like the shortest part of the park off Jake Arrieta. It just really killed the Cubs in that series. But yeah, Daniel Murphy always hits well at Wrigley Field. He objectively over the last few years, basically since the 2015 postseason, has been one of the better overall hitters in the game. He doesn't walk a ton. He doesn't strike out much. He makes good contact. He hits over 300, hitting like right at 300 this year, but he had a knee surgery, so he didn't start the season until June 12th, and so he got off to a slow start, but since the All-Star break he's batting 340 with a 370 on base.
He's also supposedly, I've been able to confirm this stat, Lou Stuckmeyer said it yesterday on the Cubs Talk podcast. Apparently, he is the best hitter in all of baseball with the runners in scoring position since 2015. Yeah. So I've been looking to figure out where that stat is, but I can't imagine Luke Stuckmeyer would just pull that out of thin air. So he's also got a career slash line at Wrigley of 413, 444, 702, an OPS of over 1,000 in 28 games. He is 7-for-12 in his last 109 plate appearances at Wrigley, with a double and a home run.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any sense. I'm reading a tweet right now in case you couldn't tell. he won 7-for-12, I think, in the last series against the Cubs, or recently, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, for lack of me being able to read stats appropriately, he hits the ball very well at Wrigley Field.
Yeah, and defensively, he's bad. Yes. That's the only adjective I can come up with that properly describes it. He is bad. He's a second baseman by trade. He makes Ben Zobrist look like Javier Baez at second. He could also play third base if you needed him to. He could play first base if you needed him to. But that's as much as you're trading for this guy for the bat. You're conceding some defense to have a guy who can actually hit and hit with runners in scoring position.
Right, and I think maybe a month ago, or maybe even just 2 months ago, there's no way this deal even happens because the Cubs, I don't think, would be considering Daniel Murphy, and I don't think the Nationals would probably trade him. It just seems like the right time, the right moment. It's crazy, though. I mean, we were just talking about like pitchers like Matt Harvey or even like Jordan Zimmerman a couple days ago that could fall through with you know, Darvish and all that. We'll get to that in a sec. But it's crazy to think that every National League team passed on Daniel Murphy.
Yeah, well, I mean, there are reasons. Yeah, obviously the defense is one. Mm-hmm. The fact that he's still kind of hobbled by the knee, so he doesn't run well. This is something that we talked about beforehand about the proper way to approach this. I'm never the guy who says you have to stick to sports, but in this instance, the stick to sports people have no say because this is comments that came directly from Daniel Murphy, so we have to talk about it. A few years ago, Billy Beane, not the A's general manager, but the other Billy Beane who played baseball, came out as homosexual. Daniel Murphy said that he disagrees with him being homosexual. He said he disagrees with the gay lifestyle. And I don't think it's a political stance to say that that's bigoted, to say that.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people really don't like Daniel Murphy for that reason. A lot of Cubs fans specifically, a few Cubs fans I know, a lot of Cubs fans I know, and a few gay Cubs fans I know are really upset about this and struggling to deal with this. So I have empathy for them in this. It reminds me, it's not equivalent, but it reminds me of the reaction to Aroldis Chapman. Obviously, as far as we know, Murphy didn't go out there and, you know, beat anybody or, you know, do anything like that. He just shared his unfortunate views publicly. But it reminds me a lot of that. And before I kick it back to you for your thoughts, I have to mention the other side of this is in a more recent story from OutSports, which is, you know, a sports publication on like LGBTQ topics. Billy Beane was interviewed and expressed that he and Daniel Murphy actually became friends after this. And he never directly said, but hinted that Murphy's views have evolved since getting to know him a little better. That's something that I think everyone should remain skeptical about until Daniel Murphy decides that he should get out there and actually make a statement about how his views have changed and why he felt they were wrong before.
Yeah. It really puts everyone in a difficult spot because, you know, everyone wants to cheer for the Cubs. They, you know, fans are, we have some of the Cubs have some of the most loyal fans in all of baseball, as we all know. And you don't want to see any sect of that baseball fandom feel ostracized because of a player that's coming onto this team that the Cubs, you know, almost need to do well. But yeah, it's disappointing that someone had thoughts like that, especially this time and age. It just kind of shows, you know, things are better, but they're also not that much different than they were, you know, maybe 10, 15 years ago too. So I know he's a very religious guy, and I think that's where a lot of this stems from. That doesn't make it any better. But, you know, it's not, I don't know, at least it's not coming from like a place of like pure hatred, I guess. But even then, you know, you're really splitting straws here. It's not a great look for anyone. No. I don't know. It's sad. I feel for the people that feel like they, you know, are going to have a tough time cheering for the Cubs this year, just because that's not something they should feel like, but yeah, unfortunately.
And I know not everybody feels that way. You know, some people basically say, hey, I root for the laundry. That was always my stance growing up. I never really cared about the players off the field. I've never been a fan of specific players. I know a lot of people, like huge Javier Baez fans, huge Anthony Rizzo, Chris Bryant fans, or whoever it may be. Sure, I enjoy watching all those players, but you know, I'm not a fan of them personally. I don't know any of these guys personally. And for me, you know, I've actually stood in that locker room and spoken to many of them, sometimes in having in-depth conversations. And I would still say, I don't know Ben Zobrist personally. You know, I don't know who he is as a man. I don't know what his thoughts are on things outside of baseball. So for me, in my position, I understand why people get upset about this kind of stuff and find it hard to root for the team with a player like that on the team. But I also understand the other side of the fans who are just like, well, that sucks and I don't like it, but I'm not going to not root for the Cubs.
Right. Yeah, I understand it. I mean, all I can say is that I feel bad for the people that feel like they can't cheer for their favorite baseball team because of this. So luckily, I mean, it's only a couple months. There's probably no way the Cubs really re-sign him unless he's, I don't know, crushes 25 home runs in the next 2 months. I don't know. You know, he would have to have some unreal performance. But, I mean, if he can help the Cubs right now, they desperately need a guy that can hit with runners in scoring position. And he does take consistent professional bats. Something Alex Rodriguez beat over the head in that one game they had in the ESPN Sunday Night Baseball with them last week or a couple weeks ago. He does take good at bats. He's a solid contact guy. I hope he helps. I will tell you right now, if the Cubs still lose a run and Daniel Murphy doesn't have a hit or something like that, I will not want to be on Twitter.
it's going to be bad every single day. It's going to be a lot of anger, and you know, as we said, a lot of it is justified for a lot of people.
Exactly.
You know, I personally can't come from a place where I totally understand, and I think most people can't. Mm-hmm. But it's called having empathy for others, and you know, I think we can all find that spot where we have empathy for how people feel about this.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting you shared that tweet from Ben Finder. or feeder from he was with he used to be with the ESPN 1000. I'm not sure what he's doing now.
Ben Pfeiffer.
Pfeiffer, thank you. I always say his name wrong. When he was talking about, I think that tweet was in reference to the Aroldis Chapman trade, and it was the right. Cubs compromising integrity for, you know, better baseball players. And yeah, it's unfortunate because you would think this front office does everything pretty soundly. They don't make too many decisions that you can't back behind. But this is probably another one of those where it's like, you know, if we're talking man to man, I don't think these guys necessarily agree with what he's saying. At least I would hope they wouldn't. But, you know, here we are.
And the last thing I'll say on it, I did see that the Cubs, and this was like a rumor or you know, a reporter put this out there. It was from a source. So take it with so many grains of salt. Yeah. But that the Cubs were concerned about those comments and that they reached out to the Washington Nationals about it as they were working on the deal. And they were encouraged by what they heard, I guess, that the Outsports article that I referenced where Billy Beans, you know, kind of hinted that Murphy's views have evolved in a better way. That is the message they got back, that he is not that same person. So again, remain skeptical until you hear it from him, but
right.
That is what is out there.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure the Cubs did their homework. They always do. I can't imagine the O's team would acquire a player without looking into, you know, what people think is, you know, I guess what the type of person he is in the locker room outside of what he is as a baseball player. They're always looking into that. But yeah, who knows if that's actually what happened or if they're just, you know, maybe playing that up to make themselves look a little better. Who knows? But yeah.
All it would really take is a smart PR person putting, you know, talking to Daniel Murphy and saying, this is what you got to say. But
exactly.
Yeah. As we move on to the baseball side of this again, Addison Russell is scratched yesterday with now a different injury, shoulder problems. I haven't seen any official announcement today. They don't play till 6:05, so I assume it won't come until later. But I think the assumption is that Addison Russell heads the DL, right?
I think so. I was talking to Tony yesterday, Tony Adraki, and he was telling me it's more than just like his middle finger, I guess, that's really hurt. It's like his knuckle and his parts of his left hand. And I guess the feeling aspect of it isn't bothering him too much unless he catches it a weird way in his glove. But every time he swings the bat, he says it hurts, and that's apparently been the case for like 2 weeks now. It's kind of,
I mean, come on.
Yeah, right. Like, it's just such a head scratching move. Like, you can't do anything with a broken knuckle. It's not like you can buddy tape. You can't put a cast on a knuckle. All you can do is let it sit there. Essentially, from what it sounds like, it's almost like a hairline fracture in his knuckle. So, I mean, ow, every time you hit the bat, that's going to hurt.
It's not exactly the same, but it's like when you break a toe. You know, like my mom's a nurse. I broke a toe when I was maybe a few years ago, and it was real bad. And like, my whole foot turned purple, and she was at work. So I asked her, you know, what can I do? Should I go to the doctor? And she said, I just asked one of the doctors here who's, you know, just happened to be there. And he said, you know, ice it, wrap it, but don't bother going to the doctor because there's nothing they can do for it. They can't put a cast on it. They can't, you know, it was my little pinky toe and it was broken, you know, like it's not like it was hanging off my foot, but that's same thing with like a knuckle or another kind of small spot. I guess they could put his hand in a cast, but that'd be kind of overkill for something that like, a couple weeks of rest. I'm not a doctor, so I don't know, but I would assume a couple weeks of rest would probably go a long way. And here they are still throwing Addison Russell out there practically every day.
I don't get it, man. I don't get it. You know, we've got Chris Bryant in the DL for the second time. Addison Russell hasn't provided it, likely because of this hand. You know, maybe not the entire season, but, you know, it's clearly been a lot worse recently. Like you said, it's a 10-day DL, man. You lose him for 10 days. You got the rosters expanding in less than 10 days. Like, why? Why not? Why not? Yep. What are we doing? Maybe they knew they were going to acquire someone and they waited. I don't know. It was just weird to see him in the lineup yesterday for like, you know, 2 hours and then get pulled because of the shoulder. Nonsense.
Right. I would assume he would be the odd man out and come back after September roster expansion. And at that point, depending on who's hitting and what's going on, maybe just the odd man out in general. But that's a little bit out down the road. I think we've probably set a record for longest first segment.
I was going to say, are we in the second segment yet?
We're at 20 minutes. Let's go to the second segment. We can talk about the Yu Darvish news, which is unfortunate but expected, and a little bit of rotation talk. So Darvish officially done for the year. He has a stress reaction in his elbow and also tricep problems, I guess. They found that on the MRI. It was a reaction to, I guess, him throwing. I'm not a doctor, so I can't explain it much better than he has a stress reaction, and they feel that he needs 6 more weeks of not throwing before he can start to recover from that. And obviously that puts him out for the season. So before we get to the rotation idea of, like, if they do make the playoffs, who their 1 through 4 are, there's also the fact that Mike Montgomery's on the DL. He had, I think, shoulder inflammation or shoulder stiffness, something like that. They put him on the DL. I think that's retroactive to the last time he started, which was August 11th. So he's free to come off the DL at any time now. They have a start on Friday, which should be his spot in the rotation. Last time they started Tyler Chatwood, he was Tyler Chatwood. They pulled him after 2 innings. This time, Jim Hickey was on Mullion Hanley this morning. He said that they have several options for that game, including Mike Montgomery, who I think it sounds like he expects to start to come off the DL. But he also said Tyler Chatwood is an option again. I can't believe that's actually true. But
yeah, gross.
Outside of that, it could be a bullpen game. He didn't say that, just my own thoughts. But also, Jesse Chavez pitched last night. So I would think that if the plan was that they're going to do a bullpen game, Joe Maddon might have decided to go to anybody else but Jesse Chavez yesterday. So where do we think this is going?
I just hope it's not Tyler Chatwood. Give anyone else a shot at this point. I mean, Tyler Chatwood, for a guy that has had just such a bad season, you know, kudos to this guy to keep going out there and keep pushing and trying and trying to get better. I can appreciate that at least. However, I cannot appreciate him continuously walking more batters than he's striking out. I feel like at this point he's got to stay in the bullpen. Use him as a long reliever. I don't know. You know, maybe you try and get a game from time to time. Maybe that's what you do for, I don't know, whoever has to start Friday or Saturday, wherever Mike Montgomery doesn't end up. Maybe you do combine Chatwood and maybe De La Rosa for 5 and go bullpen, like you were saying. Dwayne Underwood could be an option. I think his spot in the rotation would line up well for this weekend as well with the Iowa Cubs. He hasn't had necessarily a fantastic season, but it's been pretty strong. So,
yeah, he's on 4 days rest for Friday, I believe. So, might be 5 days rest even, but it's at least 4. Yeah. Man,
that's reasonable.
The options at AAA are just not great. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't put you on the spot like this, but I was just thinking to myself while we were talking, like, who is in the Iowa rotation right now? I think it's Underwood, who's had a solid but not spectacular season. It's Jen Hosang, who has a 6.49 ERA at AAA. It's Alec Mills, who has a 4.84 ERA. Luke Farrell, who we've seen. Trevor Clifton. There's a guy that I think a lot of people were interested in at some point, and he kind of lost the interest was gone last year, but he's having a solid season this year. He's not on the 40-man, so probably not going to see him at any point, but he's pitching relatively well at AAA. 12 games, 10 of them starts, 58 and a third innings, 3.86 ERA. So not terrible, but not great. So that's what you have going on there is really it's Underwood and not a lot of good options. So I guess my theory on all of this would be that I would go with Mike Montgomery if he can go, obviously, number one. Yeah. My second pick would be Dwayne Underwood. And my third pick would probably be bullpen game. And bullpen game and not involving Tyler Chatwood, which really just kills your bullpen.
Yeah, what the heck? This is really the time where Albert Alzola, that's how you say it, right? Alzola.
Alzola, I think.
Alzola, that's it. Thank you. I always want to say Alzola. It's Alzola. This is one of the places where Alzola, if he were healthy, would have been up a long time ago. He's clearly the Cubs' top pitching prospect. This would have been a great opportunity for him. If he hadn't been up before, he would have definitely been called up now or in September. He's having a pretty solid season before all the injury. He hasn't, I think he had 8 starts in Iowa. He hasn't pitched since, like, I think May or June. He's been gone for pretty much the whole season. That's a bummer. I don't want to see Luke Farrell. I don't want to see Trevor Clifton be great, but like you said, not on the 40-man roster. Jun-Ho Sung, no. He's got, I think, over a 6-something ERA in Iowa right now. Casey Coleman exists, but he's been bad.
He had one good start, I think, and then now it's a 7.66 ERA for Casey Coleman. Also not on the 40-man. So, Rob Zastrzny, not a starter anymore. He can go multiple innings, but that's it. I'm looking down the line here. Kyle Ryan started 6 games, has pitched well overall, but I don't have the splits in front of me, so I don't know if that's like better out of the bullpen than the rotation. They have a guy named Michael Roth who his peripherals aren't great. He walks too many, doesn't strike out enough, gives up too many base runners, but he has an ERA of 3.03 in 29 and 2/3 innings. So really it's if you want to bring back Luke Farrell, that's the other option other than calling up Dwayne Underwood. So I would bet my money is on Mike Montgomery making that start, and if he doesn't, oh boy. I would like to think they would bring up Underwood, but the fact that he even said Tyler Chatwood is in that conversation kind of makes me feel like they're going that way.
You would like, you just hope it's like more of like a confidence thing and less of anything else. But yeah, I don't think Jim Hickey would just say his name just to be like, oh yeah, Tyler Chatwood, you've heard of this guy before, right? So nope on all of it, but unfortunately one of these guys is going to have to, you know, one of these guys has to be a person that's going to throw some baseballs here. So it's unfortunate. No one's really fantastic. It's not like Yu Darvish would have been available for these if he'd done well in his rehab starts. He would probably still been probably a week or so away. So the Cubs would have still run into this issue. I'm just nervous what the bullpen's going to look like after, you know, these next couple games.
Yeah. More stuff from Jim Hickey. He talked about Cole Hamels, who's given them a shot in the arm. He said the pitching's trending in the right direction, so he's happy about that. He said that they fully expect Yu Darvish to be ready to go for the Cubs in 2019, 30-plus starts. that's really all it is. Yeah, Tyler Chatwood is a candidate to pitch on Friday for us. I would think that the only reason that's true is that he does believe Mike Montgomery could be back, and I feel like that might be a really close decision. Right. So like they might be finding out that morning if Mike Montgomery is going to be ready to go or not. So they may not have time to call anyone up. It may be just like Mike Montgomery. And if he's not ready to come off the DL yet, then Tyler Chatwood.
Which like I can understand why that would have to be a thing. I just really, really wish it wasn't.
Yeah. So before we go to the final segment, let's talk briefly about with Darvish officially out, what the playoff rotation could look like. It feels like right now a locked in 1-4, or at least top three. Top three, I would go Hendricks, Hamels, Lester in any order. And then number 4, Quintana has the edge on that spot. But I would think how they're trending in September might factor in. It would either be Montgomery or Quintana. And the way they've talked about limiting Montgomery's innings the rest of this year kind of leads me to believe that it's Quintana no matter what, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah, that's basically my assumption. I would say that, you know, Quintana's probably the guy they're going to go with unless something drastic happens, whether his pitching is bad or whatever it may be. And then you look at how Montgomery's been, and maybe he's the guy you slide in there. Maybe you decide it's Montgomery and Quintana for a game or something. You know, I don't know.
All right, let's go ahead and go to our final segment. We'll talk a little bit about what happened in the NL Central yesterday, and we can talk about who's in second place now. The Cincinnati Reds did the Cubs a big favor yesterday. They were down 4-0 to the Brewers. They came back, took a 7-5 lead. The Brewers tied it up at 7, but then the Reds scored 2 in the top of the ninth for a 9-7 win. The Pirates lost to the Braves 6-1. And once again, the Los Angeles Dodgers couldn't help us out. They lost 5-2 at home to the St. Louis Cardinals, and they are now in second place. So the standings are, the Cubs are 71-53, still with the top record in the National League, which is just a weird thing to say. It doesn't feel that way. The Cardinals are 70-57, 2.5 games out of first. Milwaukee 70-58, 3 games out. The Pirates are 63-64, 9.5 out. And the Reds are 56-70, 16 games out. I hate having to finish these podcasts talking about the Cardinals, but they refuse to lose. They have good young starting pitching that's performing at their peak right now. They got rid of some of the bad guys in the bullpen, so their bullpen's been better. They make me feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, they're only 2.5 out now and first place now. And I've said it a couple times now, the Cardinals are the team that kind of scares me just because they have the pedigree of being a team that's consistently just sticking around towards the end. They're playing pretty good baseball. They've got Matt Carpenter, who I think at this point is a legitimate MVP candidate, along with like maybe Freddie Freeman. And, you know, now Carlos Martinez is going to be back here soon if he's not already. I think he's staying in the bullpen, though. They've got a lot of pieces that could scare me. Their head-to-head matchup with the Cubs are pretty leaning towards the Cardinals a little bit. I just hate them. That's all. I just hate the Cardinals. That's really all it is. And it's just because they're so pesky and good at sticking around when they shouldn't be.
Yeah, I think if the season ended today, Carpenter might be the MVP just because he finished on the hot tear. And that's what everybody kind of looks at, is somebody, you know, the MVP candidate who finishes on a tear usually gets a lot of attention. And then the fact that the Cardinals came from basically selling at the trade deadline to right now sitting in the top wild card spot. They'd be hosting the Brewers in a wild card game for the chance to play the Cubs in the NLDS if the season was over today. So that is, I don't know what else to say about the Cardinals other than you really just have to hope that A, the Cubs offense turns it around, which they will at some point. B, the starting pitching stays good and the bullpen stays good. And C, that the Cardinals don't just continue this tear through the end of the year. It seems improbable, but we've seen weirder things. It feels like they've just been a better team overall since Mike Matheny left.
Yeah, I think that's been a clear positive change for this team. I didn't think it would have this much of a difference, but apparently, I don't know much about baseball. Side note, did you see that Starlin Castro reportedly cleared revocable trade waivers?
I didn't, no.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? How weird would it have been if the Cubs had traded for Castro? I'm guessing the Marlins' asking price was much higher than what the Nationals were asking for, but, you know, who knows?
I don't know. I mean, I guess they could be asking for more because I think he still has time left on his contract of, I think, 2 more years or a year plus a buyout, something like that. Doesn't make a ton of money, but this is a guy having a pretty solid season. Last year, he batted .300 for the Yankees. A couple years ago, he set a career high with 21 homers. For some reason, I feel like Castro started slow this year and had a better second half. So, you know, a guy who brings value, I guess, at least.
Yeah, if not anything, just in the nostalgia department. But yeah, how weird would it be if the Cubs ended up just going with like Javi Baez and Starlin Castro at shortstop and second? Mo Russell was either on the bench or the DL. Just been like, what was this, 2015? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, that would have been a little bit odd. But yeah, I don't think the Cubs would have made that trade simply because of the money still owed. But that would have been kind of weird. It's already kind of weird with Daniel Murphy, but
yeah.
We don't have to talk about that again.
All right.
Thanks for listening. This has been episode 130 of Locked On Cubs, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm Ryan Davis. You can find me on Twitter at Ryan Q Davis. You can find Sean Sears on Twitter at Sean R. Sears. Thanks for listening.